Money Radio. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. It is a pleasure to welcome Greg McKeown, author of a new book, Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. Is it possible that less is more? Is it possible that we are misspending our time and can spend it much better by spending less of it on things that just aren't essential? Greg McKeown joins us. Hello, Greg.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be having a conversation about this.
Thank you. This is a common problem for many people, I think. Many people feel stretched too thin. People feel that we are being drawn in multiple directions at the same time, that we are overworked, not being used to our full potential, not being as productive as we would like to be. And perhaps the problem is that we're trying to do too much. Is that the basic idea?
Well, I think it is. And I think that basically we've been sold a bill of goods. We have been sold and sold for so long on this idea of a superman or a superwoman who can do it all, who can fit it all in, who sleep 4 hours a night and, you know, force it way to, this is what leads to success. And it is not what I found. What I have found is that this pursuit, this undisciplined pursuit of more, actually leads to the plateauing of people's performance. It keeps them back from what we could otherwise contribute. So yes, I think this is what's really going on.
How is this idea of essentialism not just time management or productivity enhancing ideas? What is different about it?
Well, I think that both time management and productivity, you know, they're related to this. But here's how I think about it differently. There are lots of books out there on sort of tips and tricks and efficiency techniques, that kind of thing. But if you try to read and apply those from what I'm calling a non-essentialist mindset, then you'll still just try to fit more and more in. You'll just try more efficiently to do more and cram it all together. And so I think that first you have to have a change of mindset. You have to think differently. And I'm contrasting here this non-essentialist thing that we've been sold that I just was talking about with an essentialist ethic, basically the design principle of less but better. And that if we suddenly discover how much more valuable that is, valuable at work, valuable at home, meaningful experiences in life, as soon as we really learn to believe that this will actually produce the breakthrough results we want, then you can move into more efficiency and any other sort of practical things. But this book is primarily about, you know, challenging the dominant assumption that we have right now, because I think we've been oversold the value of more and undersold the value of less.
So there is a core way of thinking as an essentialist, getting away from this idea of I have to do it and more to the idea of it's my choice and I'll make a decision whether I need to do it or not.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's to discover that we can really design. You know, there's a lot of people, and I'm very sympathetic to it, that basically feel that non-essentials are non-negotiable, and especially at work. You know, I've got to make a living and I've got to have this job. And so they give up an enormous amount of power right at the beginning with that assumption. And what I've found is that people who will explore essentialism, experiment with essentialism, discover that they have a lot more power than they realize. So as just one example, somebody that learned about essentialism before the book was finished was felt empowered by it, went and negotiated with their boss. They said, look, I need 5 days off for my wedding to prepare specifically for it. They did the work that they were assigned to do, did it ahead of schedule. The boss was thrilled with it. And then as they entered that 5 days, they came back and they said, well, actually, I'm sorry. There's been last-minute work come up, and somebody dropped the ball. You need to do it. And in the past, every time in the past, they'd have said yes to that. They didn't. They pushed back. They got their 5 days totally focused on what was most important and were touched enough by that discovery that they had this greater power than they realized that they put it into their marriage vows. They literally put, I'm going to essentialize this marriage relationship over all other relationships. And I think that that embodies, you know, just one example of someone that was experimenting with essentialism and found that they actually had more power than was obvious at the beginning.
And yet, for many people, they are confronted with these decisions. Do they spend more time at work when called upon, or do they spend more time with family? Do they spend more time just essentially doing nothing, taking a little time out to unwind, to decompress, which may actually lead to greater productivity? There are all these things, trivial things, many of them, pulling at people. How do we discern the trivial from the vital?
Well, there was something you just said that that made me think of example of somebody else that I interviewed for the book, and this is it's another true story. It's a leader here in Silicon Valley, and he realized that his stress and frustration was going up as the value of as the quality of his work was going down. And when he realized that, he almost wanted to quit the company. But suddenly he thought, what if I looked at this all through a different lens, an essentialist lens, really? What if I just said yes to those things that I really thought were going to move the needle, and said no to all the other stuff that is good and is sort of interesting or useful but isn't critical? And he did that, and this is what he got back. At work, he ended up that year with performance evaluations that went up. He ended up with one of the highest bonuses of his career because he was doing work that was truly valuable instead of just busy work. And number two, at home, he now had a new discipline. He would turn his phone off at a certain time. And so he was able to have dinner uninterrupted with his wife every night. And he was able to go out to the gym and enjoy that recuperation and investment. And so in that little story, I think is the argument, you know, a value proposition for essentialism, which says, you know, we can be utilized at a higher point of contribution if we take the time to figure out what's essential, eliminate what's not, and make it as effortless as possible to execute on those things.
It's difficult to do. More and more, it seems like many people are chained to the phone, chained to their emails, chained to their text. We really aren't taking the time to just stop and look around, sleep enough, play a little bit. And that is really an essential part of staying alert and alive and maintaining a passion for whatever it is we're doing, isn't it?
Totally is. You know, I was at Twitter recently, and it was ironic. I was teaching essentialism, and one of the people there said, do you remember what it was like to be bored? And of course, what he means is that now every minute, you know, you're in an airport, the plane's late, you used to have to sit, you have to think, you had to be bored, you had to just be able to wander. Maybe you read a book, you go get a book, and even that's a bit different. At least it's focused thinking about a single subject. Now he says, well, none of us do that. The moment we have a second, we're on the phone, and we're plugged in, and we're being sold on what the benefits are of that. And I'm not saying there are no benefits. There are benefits, but there's a trade-off to it. And the trade-off is, you know, no time to just think, no time to ponder. And I wonder sometimes, I sort of say, yeah, what will a society be like where nobody ponders, where nobody has space to really think? And we're fast, you know, going to find out because we're headed there. But on a slightly more optimistic note, there's this increased number of people, a sort of groundswell movement of people that we're in this busyness bubble, and that they're saying, look, we don't want to be the people that invested in real estate at the end of that bubble. We want to get out of this while we can still see what's going on, and put aside our irrational exuberance and actually invest in what's essential, and not just in this sort of undisciplined pursuit of more.
There is a fear, I think, that if we eliminate some of those non-essentials, we are reducing our options. But you make the claim that an essentialist actually ends up with more options than the non-essentialist.
Well, they explore more. And it's a simple arithmetic. And that is that if every idea that I get interested in, I suddenly commit myself to. I remember one executive who, on the way to work, heard this little piece about ergonomically sound keyboards. And so he spent the first 45 minutes of his, you know, staff meeting absorbed in that subject because he suddenly committed himself to it. Well, if you do that on every new idea and every day is a new, you know, focus for the day and everybody needs to get pulled into this, actually, in the end, you can't explore that many things because you're just busy committing to each new thing. And so I do think that essentialists just have some space to think and consider, is it this thing I want to do? Is it this thing? Is it this thing? And they look at them, and it's not so much reacting to it as so much thinking, evaluating it. And then, yes, just committing to a few things, but they've had the space to explore and reason and get to something that they feel really right about.
Okay, so people are listening to us and perhaps getting the idea that, yeah, there are some things that I could eliminate from what I'm doing, and I can focus a little bit more on just the essentials. So how do we go about actually cutting out all that trivial stuff? How do we actually go about doing it without getting people ticked off at us?
Well, you know, I have written quite a bit about this, but I almost want to just allow for something you just said, which is the trade-off might be that people are a bit ticked off at us. I think that there often is a trade-off between short-term popularity loss and the longer-term respect. And if we don't want the longer-term respect, well, just keep saying yes to everything. If we don't want to be able to pursue a few things that are tremendously valuable for us, you know, say yes to everything. But don't pretend that there's no trade-off here. Now, don't pretend that it's a trade-off between, well, I can either say, yes, I don't know, I can say yes to everything and still end up focused, you know, achieving the things that really mattered. I just don't see that. I don't see that experience. It's an arithmetic problem. And so, you know, that's the first, you know, observation to really allow for trade-offs. Now, how to navigate this as gracefully as possible so that we aren't, you know, offending everybody left, right, and center, I think is to take what we just said about trade-offs and bring it into the conversation. It's a very rational and helpful way to do it. So that you can simply say to, you know, somebody requests something at work, and you say, yeah, I'm very happy to do it. Which of the things that I'm already working on would you want me to deprioritize so I can focus on this? So you're bringing the trade-off into the conversation. Or how about, you know, they come with a new project they'd like you to do, and you say, look, I've got 5 projects. This will be number 6. I'm happy to do 6 projects and do them sort of reasonably well. Or I can do one or 2 things and do them superbly well. You know, which is it you'd like me to do? And in both cases, we're just negotiating. And we're negotiating a no. We're negotiating how to be able to focus on what's essential. And done right, and it can be done right, it's not about not being helpful. It's about being the most helpful that we can be.
Hmm. We're talking with Greg McEwen. He is the author of a new book, Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. Essentialism, and it's a very interesting book. One of the ways that I tell whether it's a book that grabs me is how many times I've dog-eared the pages. And Greg, the book is now completely dog-eared.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm very pleased to hear that. Tell me one thing before, I don't know how much time we have actually, but just tell me before we're done, what's something that you dog-eared?
Ah, I'll do that. Hang on just a moment, and I'll open up one of the dog ears, because there are several, but I'll pick one as we continue our conversation with Greg McEwen. Money Radio, thank you for joining us. We're talking with Greg McEwen. He is the author of Essentialism. Essentialism, the disciplined pursuit of less. And Greg was asking me, what I had dog-eared. A couple of things, actually. A bunch of dog ears here. One of them was the idea of eliminate, how we cut out the trivial many. What will I say no to? That is the question. Then there was another one. Hang on just a second. Let me see if I can find it here. The Lincoln quote, here, about making execution of this effortless, a couple of ways of thinking about execution. And there was a quote attributed to Abraham Lincoln, "Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I will spend the first four sharpening the axe." I love that one.
I appreciate you you calling those out. I mean, this is exactly right. There's at least two ways of thinking about execution, about getting things done. And the non-essentialist model, you know, this superman, superwoman image that we already described, is you force it. I mean, you know, even the language, we make it happen. Even the language of execution, I mean, it's killing something. The essentialist view is very different. The essentialist view is, look, how can we make it effortless? How can we automate this process? How can we create a routine that allows this to happen almost as frictionless as possible? And that's a different way of thinking. And so basically how they achieve this, the trade-off involved, is you say, well, because we're not committing to everything, because we're not doing everything, there is therefore greater space to be able to prepare and make sure that the things we have committed to have as clear a path as possible to completion.
There was another one that I thought kind of struck home for me, and that was the idea of essentialism as the art of editing. You describe it as the invisible art. I write quite a bit. I also edit audio. So for me, this one made perfect sense. If I don't edit what I write, what I'd end up with is just a mess. And the same would apply to most books. We want to read something that's succinct and to the point. We don't want to go to a five-hour movie when a two-hour movie can tell the story so much better. We have to cut out certain parts of things that just don't lead to the overall end being a clean, succinct piece of art, really.
This is exactly right. And, you know, in the Academy Awards, one of the awards we don't pay attention to is Best Film Editing. And what I think is interesting about that, and what, you know, sort of very few people seem to know, is that since 1981, not a single film has won Best Picture without at least being nominated for film editing. Mm. In fact, about two-thirds of the cases, the movie nominated for film editing has gone on to win Best Picture. And so there is something about the craft of editing that is, again, undervalued. And part of the reason it's undervalued is because it is this invisible art. You don't see a movie, and you don't see what is edited. You see what is remaining. But it's such a critical part of a great movie, a great book, a great play. It's what isn't in there. And it's the willingness, as Stephen King put it this way in his book called On Writing, which is very well put together, as maybe not surprisingly. But he says, you have got to be willing to kill your darlings. He says, kill your darlings. You know, you love them, but you must be willing to kill them. And it's the same idea. Mm. You know, being an essentialist would be relatively easy if all we were doing was getting rid of complete time wasters. Now, some of that to be done. But where it really becomes hard and powerful is where we start saying no to really good opportunities, so that there's room for us to keep on thinking and exploring, so that we're able to, you know, to explore how we'd get up to the next level.
I can say this, you've probably never read a good book that wasn't well edited. Here's one that is, though. Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less by Greg McKeown. The Disciplined Pursuit of Less, Essentialism. And I'll leave you with this, because we are leaving right now, so we are in the present moment. What's important now? What's important now? Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.